Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez from Good to Be Social. And today we're going to be talking about client teams. What are they and how can law firms use them? Our guest today is Kelly Harbor. Kelly is the Chief Business Development Officer at Goldston & Storrs, an AmLaw 200 law firm with offices in Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. Kelly has more than 20 years of experience in marketing, business development, and technology, and almost 50 years experience in the legal industry. Kelly is particularly passionate about data-driven decision-making and is active in the SALI Alliance, a non-for-profit organization dedicated to bringing standards to the legal industry. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thanks so much for having me, Guy.
Thank you for being here. So before we get started on our topic, tell me a little bit more about yourself. How did you get started in the legal industry and in particular in marketing and business development in the legal industry?
Sure. So I moved to Massachusetts in 2004 from South Florida, and that's where I grew up and went to college. And I worked in a couple of marketing services companies, and I was just at the point where I was starting to look around, and a recruiter contacted me about a job at a law firm. And honestly, I had never really thought about the number of people who are not lawyers who are running the business of large law firms. And it was really interesting to me. And I ended up getting the job at Bingham McCutcheon. And I spent time in the IT department working exclusively with the marketing and business development team there on really optimizing their marketing technology investments and figuring out how to derive insights from their technology investments. And I decided that while I always want to be at that intersection, I really wanted to be on their side of the house. And so I moved into a marketing and business development role there and have pursued that track when I joined Goldston in 2014 and have worked my way up into the Chief Business Development Officer role just at the end of 2021.
Fantastic. And then tell me a little bit about this, and I don't know how I pronounce it, SALI Alliance or SALI yeah. Alliance. What is that? And it sounds fascinating.
Sure. It's great. Standards Advancement for the Legal Industry, SALI is how you pronounce it, Alliance. And it's basically a group of people who work in law firms to clients, in-house counsel, technology companies, and other consultants who are interested in creating a single taxonomy to describe legal work. And that includes things like rules of parties in matters. It includes things like areas of law and types of services being provided. It's something that all law firms really sort of figure out on their own. And at Goldston & Storrs, we were revamping our intake process. And we realized that we needed a brand new taxonomy for the way that we were describing our legal work. And we stumbled upon the SALI Alliance through some industry connections. And we did some, you know, pressure testing to see how well the taxonomy fit the type of work that we do. And it was a really good matchup. We made some adjustments to it that met our needs, but for the most part, it worked out of the box and saved us really a lot of internal blood, sweat, and tears to figure out within practice areas, what should the sub-practice areas be called, and how do you intertwine something like a real estate practice with a litigation practice where we do real estate litigation. And under our prior taxonomy, you'd have to choose whether that is revenue that is allocated to the real estate practice or allocated to litigation. With the SALI taxonomy, the legal matter specification standard allows you to do is to give it two attributes. So real estate can be the area of law, and the service being provided can be litigation or dispute resolution. And so now, if you want to get your arms around the real estate work, you can do that. And if you want to get your arms around all the dispute work across areas of law, you can do that. So it takes a little bit of the politics or sort of it breaks the connection between organizational units like practice areas and law firms and descriptors for the way work is being done. And this obviously has implications across the law firm, from, you know, financial reporting to pricing to experience management. There are just lots of implications for being able to get at experience in a number of different ways, and for the classification to be as pure as possible and not motivated by, you know, where the revenue needs to get credited or, you know, who originated the work.
That is fascinating. And it brings me back to my days at KPMG when I was there. One of the things I was in charge of was redesigning our global website. And as you can imagine, a global company like KPMG with 175 different countries, the taxonomy issue was a nightmare. And everyone,
yeah.
I mean, it was, and you want to talk about politics. So figuring out that taxonomy was a real, real challenge. So it sounds like, you know, this Sally Alliance is helping to figure that out within the legal industry, which I think is fantastic. I would like to learn more about it. And maybe in the future, we'll have you back to talk more about that, because I think it's a fascinating topic. And I think it's one that, you know, more law firms should be aware of for sure. But let's shift gears a little bit and talk about why we have you here today, which is the concept of client teams. So tell us a little bit, what are client teams exactly?
So client teams are probably a little bit different at most law firms, but generally speaking, we would be talking about groups of people, and that would include paralegals and other members of the professional staff who are working to strengthen and grow a client relationship. So the most basic client team function is to share information about the client and their business, and then, you know, the structure and framework of the teams can grow in sophistication from there. So, you know, further along the spectrum, you would have something called strategic account, you know, which is typically a smaller number of people, not just gathering together all of the timekeepers and professional staff supporting a client relationship, but a smaller number of people who have identified specific measurable goals to grow a client relationship and who are actively pursuing those goals.
Why should law firms consider client teams? What are the benefits associated with client teams?
So minimally, if you have client relationships that span practices or offices, you want to have a client team so that you can be coordinated and, you know, again, sort of at baseline, you want to avoid looking disorganized or, you know, uninformed about the scope of work that the law firm is doing for a client. But beyond that, you know, sort of baseline function, you can really mobilize resources around adding value to client relationships in ways that will ideally foster loyalty and deepen the client's relationship. So getting people together to talk about what can we do to help the client's business grow? Do they need introductions to investors or another strategic partner? Do they have new people who maybe need some training? You know, would they be interested in us giving CLE presentations? Do they feel like a valued client? Do they know us as people? Do we know them as people? And you can start to then set goals and create associated activities for, you know, ideally everybody who's a part of the client team to feel like they're contributing to advancing that relationship. And the more you do of that, the better you'll be able to anticipate needs as they arise. And from there, you know, obviously, the goal would be, you know, maintaining and then growing revenue down the road. And then finally, you know, the other important benefit from the law firm side is the more deeply entrenched a client is with your firm and the more, you know, tightly woven together your organizations are, the less portable the business. And in, you know, a lateral market like today, you know, you're seeing so much movement and institutionalized client relationships really create that stickiness between organizations. You know, there will always be important relationships between, you know, partners and clients. And, you know, that cannot be completely undone, of course. Again, the more you're working with a client, the more deeply the team understands the client's business. And it's not just about a single person and their capability or their understanding of the client's business. you know, you're protecting against succession and transition on both sides, you know, and again, sort of more deeply entrenching the most important relationships for the firm.
And does any client is a candidate for a client team, or are there specific types of clients that would be better candidates for a client team?
Great question. So, you know, most client team programs are run through the marketing and business development department, you know, as they are at Goulston and Storrs. You know, you have limited time to spend working on client teams. And so you want to be sure that you're investing your time in the relationships that would see the most benefit. So, you know, number one, every law firm has clients that are large enough in scope and complexity that they really require that at least baseline coordination, right? The right hand knows what the left hand is doing. So you minimally have to have those relationships with some level of extra care and infrastructure. Those are typically easy decisions to make. Then you're really looking for a couple of things. Internal buy-in is really important. So if the relationship partner or partners are not going to show up for client team meetings or are not going to follow up on the action items that are needed to achieve the goals, it's going to be an uphill climb. And you know, the team members won't engage as much because they'll sort of take their cues from the relationship partner and say, well, if they're not really invested, why should I be invested? You know, having that investment from the relationship partners to really see the team succeed and thrive is important. And, you know, equally important would be having a client that has growth opportunities, or, you know, if you've identified a service issue that the firm needs to rally around and correct, or if there's a significant transition on either side, on the client side or the firm side, and you really want to, you know, make sure that you're showing that client extra attention and appreciation to get through what could be a little bit of a bumpy transition period. Those are all things that would cause us to consider a client for a client team.
Really interesting. So what does a successful client team look like? Like, who is a part of the team and what makes it a successful team?
So in terms of who's on the team, it will vary a little bit based on what you're trying to achieve. So if you're really focused on just, you know, the highest level of care and feeding of a significant client relationship, you want to have a lot of people involved. You want to have the associates, you want to have the paralegals, you know, you want to have, if there are pricing or project management professionals, or if you have somebody from client service or marketing and business development team that's part of that team, you want them in the room as well. You want to sort of go broad and make sure that there are lots of eyes and ears on this important client relationship. If you have a team that's more in the sort of strategic growth place, then you probably have a smaller team that is meeting more frequently and, you know, is really taking action between meetings in order to achieve those goals. In any case, you know, the first example or the second, there always needs to be a reason for the team to exist. And the reason for that team to exist may be simply to make sure that everybody is thinking about this important client and understands the scope of what we're doing. Or the goal might be to cross-sell a particular area, or, you know, to get more deeply entrenched in an area in which you already do business with a client. I think ideally you want the client's voice to be included. So we often invite clients to join client team meetings and give them the floor to talk about what their goals are, what they're trying to achieve, how we can help. So I think that's another aspect. And the teams are generally strategically important to the firm, either because of their size and scale currently or what the firm perceives their growth potential to be.
And how often do these client team meets typically? You said, you know, for strategic accounts, it's probably more frequent than others, but in general, like at Goulston and Storrs, how often do regular client teams meet? And then how often do the strategic accounts meet?
So our strategic teams meet about every month, maybe every 6 weeks, even if it's just a quick sort of check-in, because there tends to be a good amount of activity happening between meetings and, you know, in trying to achieve a goal, you don't want to wait too long before you check in. When you're talking about sort of the larger scale relationships where you're having a, you know, a big tent or an all hands meeting, in those instances, we do those about quarterly. And, you know, that's generally frequent enough to talk about significant milestones that have happened in the client's relationship, what the pipeline is looking like, what people should know, if there were moves or changes to, you know, people within the client's in-house team, you know, that type of thing. Quarterly is probably enough. I will say when COVID shutdowns first began happening a couple of years ago, our internal client teams were meeting almost weekly.
Wow.
Because the client's needs were changing so rapidly based on, you know, how quickly the different relief packages and shutdowns were happening and the implications of those kinds of things. We found that we had these really short but very frequent meetings. And the first question on the agenda was always, what does the client need from us right now? Knowing that next week, it'll probably be different.
For the broader teams or even the strategic accounts, how often is the client actually involved? Is it like once a year, he or she comes in and talks about what's going on? Or is it a first-time thing? Like, how frequently are you getting feedback from the clients into the team itself?
Yes, so that's a great question. And so we have a formal feedback program. So I want to pick up on what you said about feedback. And we weave in both longer form client feedback interviews and end of matter debriefs for significant matters at the firm. And so we bring in the client's voice. Those are conducted by me and our co-managing partners and others in the marketing business development team. So we bring that feedback back to the team, funneled through that process. Having the client come and speak directly to the team is something that we're doing more and more of. I think once a year is probably right. Again, just depending on each client's sort of circumstance, but having that sort of once a year check-in to talk about plans for the year and kind of the state of the union, if you will, seems to be a good cadence so far.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say, for example, you have a client, you know, using the example that you gave before, right? So it's primarily a client that you're helping in the real estate industry, right? Maybe they're doing some acquisition, some development work, financing, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden now there's a lawsuit, there's a litigation. How does the litigation partner, does that person get brought into the client team, or sort of explain to me how that process would actually work?
Yes, that's a really good question. And it relates to sort of ongoing team maintenance. And so there are members of core teams that are solid and stable over time, right? Year upon year, they're just involved in that client relationship. And then we would always look before a client team meeting occurs at who is currently being invited to the team meeting. And then we would make those kinds of additions and say, it's really important if we're now working in a new practice area for representatives who are doing that work to come in and both share what they're doing and also for us to keep them in the loop on sort of the broader picture of the relationship. So there's absolutely some ongoing movement in and out. We tend not to bring in new team members if there's something that's small and discreet and that relationship is not likely to become something that's long lasting. Just because it's a time investment, it's a non-billable time investment. We want to sort of limit those. So it's a little bit of a judgment call as to when you bring people in, but certainly in the example that you described, if there, you know, is suddenly a litigation that the client is facing, one or more litigators would be brought in to the team indefinitely until that significant matter is resolved. And then maybe they stay, maybe they sunset until something else occurs.
One other thing that you mentioned was really interesting to me, and that is the concept of institutionalizing relationships, right? Both at the firm side as well as the client side. Starting with the firm side, knowing lawyers the way I do, and having been a former lawyer, lawyers value and guard the relationships pretty strongly. How do client teams help to institutionalize those relationships so that clients get more exposure to other members of the firm and other partners beyond the partner that had the initial relationship?
So that certainly varies dramatically depending on the culture of the law firm. At Goulston and Storrs, our compensation system is such that collaboration is rewarded. And so we hear regularly in client feedback interviews the clients will say, there are no barriers to collaboration. If I need somebody in another practice area, I don't have to wait for partners to duke it out over origination credit. You know, I just get the person that I need on the phone. So that obviously, you know, works hugely in our favor in trying to do this institutionalization of relationships. It's really just woven into the fabric of Goulson and Storrs. You know, certainly at other firms, that's a big challenge. And there needs to be some incentive for the partners to share their relationships. And that goes back to what I was saying before, when you're trying to choose which teams to rally your resources behind, having that internal buy-in, having that partner or partners who sort of hold the keys to those relationships invested in the notion of expanding them and giving people a chance to, you know, develop a relationship with a client, having that buy-in at the outset is really important to the long-term viability and institutionalization of the client relationship.
And what about the reverse? How do client teams, I guess to a certain extent it's a cross-selling exercise, but how do you try to, I guess, change the perception of the firm within the client organization, right? If you're working primarily with a particular division of a company or a particular geography, you know, how do client teams work to expanding the relationship within the client and changing perhaps the perception of the types of services that the firm provides?
Yeah, that's certainly a really important part of having, you know, a successful cross-selling and institutionalized client relationship. And there are a couple of ways to achieve it. So one is you have to do your homework as a client team, and you have to know what the client is up to. You have to be monitoring the news. You have to see if they're expanding into different geographic regions. You know, you have to consume the information that's publicly available. Earnings call transcripts are hugely beneficial if you're representing public company clients. You absolutely need to be on top of those when they come out. And then, you know, just again, building those relationships and spending the time off the clock to talk to the client about what they have going on beyond what you might be doing at a particular time, understanding how their business is planning to grow, what risks they might be concerned about, you know, either on the regulatory front or if they're starting to see an increase in litigation. It's being genuinely curious about the client's business and just trying to find ways to help. So it's that, and then being informed enough about the capabilities that your firm has to be able to facilitate those introductions. You know, you have to identify a legitimate demand for services beyond what you're providing, and then, you know, be able to introduce somebody who can help, who's a good fit from a style perspective and substantively can provide what they need.
So interesting. All right, last question for you. How do you scale a client team program?
Again, you know, the client team programs that I have been a part of both at Bingham and here at Goulson and Storrs, you're dealing with limited resources, limited people in the marketing business development team that can support these teams. So you want to be able to provide the right types of services. You want to make this a good experience for the partners so that, you know, they tell their friends that they want to have a client team and what the benefits are. And so you have to know your limitations in terms of what you'll be able to do well. And you also have to appreciate that not all teams are created equal. And so some teams just won't require as much effort. You know, a team that's meeting quarterly to share information and stay coordinated and, you know, that's a healthy, thriving relationship just isn't going to require the same amount of day-to-day effort as a team that, you know, you're aggressively trying to grow based on, you know, having identified some demand and trying to build relationships and seize an opportunity that's on the table. So just really thinking through and actually sort of classifying, you know, whether on paper or just in your head, these are sort of the client team's light. You know, these are sort of the middle of the road bell curve of client team support. And then on the other side of the bell curve, you've got these strategic accounts that are going to require a larger time investment.
That is so, so fascinating, Kelly. Thank you so much for that. So unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I could talk to you about this for a long time. I just find it really, really interesting. Before I let you go, what could you share with our audience? You know, a lot of our audience are marketing professionals at law firms of all different types, of all different sizes. if they're not using client teams or thinking about implementing a client team program, or perhaps they have one, but it's not really operating in the way that it should. Any advice that you would have for them?
Yeah, so there are a couple things. One is I am an avid reader, and I sort of can't get enough of legal industry books. And there are a couple that I would recommend if you want to sort of zoom out and evaluate your approach. One is by Sylvia Coulter and Stephen Bell, and it's called SAM Legal, Turning Key Clients into Strategic Accounts. It's a super quick read, and there's lots of really helpful tools, templates, draft emails. You know, it's literally a handbook for how to do this stuff. And then, you know, also, if you're interested in a more sort of institutional approach, there's a book by Jack Newton called The Client-Centered Law Firm, How to Exceed in an Experience-Driven World. And that also has some, you know, tactical advice, but it really is a great mind shift and talks about sort of the benefits of having a client-centered mind shift in your law firm. And, you know, again, I think evaluating your teams where they are, you know, create a 2x2 matrix. This is what I've done. It's really simple. And on one axis, you have internal engagement. On the other axis, you have opportunity for growth. And, you know, plot your teams where they are and then focus your resources, you know, on your upper right quadrant, right? Your high engagement internally and your high opportunity for growth. And then, you know, limit the time that you're spending in the other quadrants.
Thank you so much. Kelly, it's been phenomenal. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It really has been a great learning experience for myself, and I'm sure for many of our audience. For our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, please go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there. You can also check out some of our great past podcasts. Kelly, again, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you. And as I mentioned, I'd love to bring you back sometime in the future to talk more about taxonomies and the SALI Alliance, the great work that you're doing there.
Thank you for having me. It was great to chat about client teams and would be delighted to return.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again, Kelly. And to our listeners, thank you for your time today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We will see you next time.